Hi, everybody, and welcome to the Yacht Racing Podcast with me, your host, Justin Chisholm. My guest on this episode is 23-year-old Bermudian sailor Emily Nagel, who was recently announced as a member of the Dutch Volvo Ocean Race Syndicate's Team AkzoNobel. Now, the chances are you may not have heard her name before, but Emily is an interesting story. At 23, she's the youngest sailor in the Team AkzoNobel crew, and in fact, she's one of the youngest sailors across all the teams in this edition of the Volvo Ocean Race. There's no denying that she has relatively little in terms of ocean racing miles under her belt. Her racing background is mainly in team racing and match racing from her days at Southampton University. But she's a recently qualified naval architect, and as you'll hear in the interview, Emily's a real go-getter who takes her chances when they come. She also isn't somebody who's afraid to put in the hard work necessary to make the dream of becoming a professional sailor come true. The America's Cup in Bermuda, she turned an unpaid internship at SoftBank Team Japan into a full-time job in the syndicate's design department. And now, after trialing for 2 months with Team AkzoNobel, she's about to take on her first Volvo Ocean Race. When I sat down with her at the team shore base in Lisbon recently, it was shortly after her place on the team had been announced, and the reality of what she'd achieved was still sinking in. So, Emily Nagel, let's start by saying congratulations, shall we? Just confirmed as a member of Team AkzoNobel in the Volvo Ocean Race. How does that feel?
Thanks. It's a pretty incredible feeling. I never really expected this to happen so soon, and I'm unbelievably excited. It's something I've always wanted to do, and to have this opportunity is incredible.
Now, I've been doing some research on you, and you're not going to be upset when I say to you that I had to do that because I didn't know much about you, and a lot of people don't really know much about you, because you've had a kind of interesting introduction to this whole thing. You haven't come up through Olympics and kind of major dinghy sailing championships, but you've taken the opportunities when they've presented you, and in the last couple of years you've been involved in the America's Cup, you've been involved in the Youth America's Cup, and now you're involved in the Volvo Ocean Race. How did you do that?
Well, I've been one of those people who, if I want to do something, I make it my mission to find out how to do it. And so I started sailing when I was 10. I don't have any family history of sailing. Neither of my parents sail. They tried it once I started sailing, and it just didn't go very well. So for a long time, I was the only sailor in my family. My younger brother's now taken it up, but for most of the time, it was just me. And when I just started sailing, I think it was Christmas, I got given a book about Ellen MacArthur. It was her first one about sailing around the world, and from that moment I was hooked. I always knew that that was something I wanted to do. I wanted to sail around the world. I've never been one of those people, though, that thought to do it by themselves. I always wanted to do it with a crew, so from that age, it was Volvo. Yeah, one day I'm going to do the Volvo. I didn't know how. I had absolutely no plan at that point. All I knew was I had to do it at some point. And then the America's Cup was also one of those things that I'd heard about and then I read about and decided, okay, yeah, I don't care that there's no girls in it. One day I'm going to do it. So those had always been two of my big goals to get involved with. And then as I got older, I got distracted along the way by more sensible things. I did an engineering degree at the University of Southampton, and I had practical plans in place. I was going to do the engineering route and all of that, and I ended up switching from a mechanical engineering degree to a course called ship science, which is engineering with naval architecture. Mm-hmm. And at that point, I was like, okay, I'm going to combine what I love. I'm going to combine the engineering with sailing and go into yacht design and try and get a job in the America's Cup that way. So that's kind of what led me into the America's Cup this past year. I very conveniently graduated in June of 2016. And in that final year of university, I was also trialing for the Youth America's Cup, as it was announced that Bermuda was going to enter a team.
Because you're from Bermuda?
Yep, I'm from Bermuda. I was born and raised there. I left for boarding school and university, but still my home, always will be. So as soon as it was announced that there was going to be a Youth America's Cup team from Bermuda, I was like, hell yeah, I've got to go for that. I spent my final year just focusing everything I could on getting into that team. Probably wasn't the best thing for my degree.
Right.
Still passed my degree and it was all fine, but probably could have spent a bit more time studying than sailing and training. I pretty much lived in the gym that year, trying to get big enough and strong enough that I could compete with the guys, because the Youth America's Cup had never had a girl in it before. So I knew I'd have to be able to be just as strong as the guys in order to get in. So I managed to get into Bermuda's early team. There was 11 of us, so I went back to Bermuda for that in June, as soon as I'd finished my last exam. And then because I was in Bermuda, where the America's Cup was, I've got to get a job with one of the teams. I'd do anything.
Newly qualified naval architect, that's a pretty good CV.
Yeah. At that point, though, I was willing to do anything to be involved. I didn't care if it was design or sweeping floors. I just wanted to be involved with the team and meet people and see what it's like to actually work in a team. I got really lucky as well. I ended up meeting the right people who, in the end, managed to get me kind of an internship with SoftBank Team Japan. And so I started working with them in all of my free time. So we'd kind of have a week of training with Team BDA once a month, and then the other 3 weeks we'd have off. So I'd go and work at SoftBank and do all like my gym training and stuff for the youth team early in the mornings or late at night. I was kind of working for free, but I was in the design team and the shore team. So it was an absolutely incredible experience. I got to work with the top designers and top athletes, and I mean, I still can't believe the guys that I was getting to work with. I mean, first day meeting the likes of Dean Barker and Jeremy Lomas was like, okay, I'm actually here. This is incredible. So being immersed in that world was really good for my kind of competitive drive and seeing where I could take my career as both a sailor and as a naval architect. And then, so when I first started that year, I was like, this is really good. I'm like, naval architecture, learning loads. I started to get a bit distracted by the sailing side. Mm-hmm. So I was sailing the GC32s regularly in Bermuda, the youth team, and loving every minute of that. But then I also had the opportunity to do some offshore sailing. I sailed from New York to Bermuda with Jimmy Spithill and Shannon Falcone on a foiling catamaran.
That was the Red Bull project, I think, yeah?
Yep, the Red Bull flying on water. And that was an incredible experience.
I bet it was.
It was crazy loose. I think the term used to describe me for most of it was blissfully ignorant, because none of the guys really let on at times. How dangerous of a situation we were in. We had no safety boats, untested, foiling catamaran, mm-hmm. pretty rough conditions.
Yeah. It got pretty bad, didn't it? It got pretty windy and it became a bit of a survival situation.
Pretty much. But I loved every minute of it. I mean, when I got back, everyone called me crazy. My parents were pretty relieved I'd made it back in one piece. I don't think my mum slept the entire time. And I got back and I was just that, okay, got to get in the Volvo. Like, I didn't expect for it to happen this year, that's for sure. That was just kind of the kick that I needed to be like, okay, I can do this offshore stuff. Like, It wasn't my first offshore. I'd done some before, but that was the moment where I was like, I want more of this.
So how did you transition that from being there with the America's Cup? I mean, obviously, Simeon Sempon was part of the whole whole America's Cup at some point. Was that how it happened? Did you just approach him, or how did it happen?
Yeah, so in March, I got a call from SoftBank asking me to come on full-time. And that was an incredibly hard decision because it meant I would have to drop out of Team BDA and the Youth America's Cup. But I made the decision that in the long run, it'd be worth it because it really helped naval architecture career, and I thought it was the adult move to make. And it was just incredible how it worked out, because the week I moved to SoftBank full-time was the week that Simeon came back in the end of March, because one of our grinders was ill and needed to be replaced for a bit. So Simeon came back, and obviously I knew who he was because I followed the Volvo. And I just wanted to know more about how to get into the Volvo in general, whether it was sailing team, shore team. In my head, my plan was after the cup, I would try and get into a shore team, just clean the boat, anything. I'd be a nipper, not expecting to get in this time round, and I'd kind of work up, and hopefully in the next cycle, I'd be able to find a position. So I asked him a lot of questions about it, and he said to just send the CV over and he'd take a look and kind of talk to me about it, but obviously no promises with anything. And then all of the cup guys that I worked with annoyed him a lot about it. Just kind of brought it up every now and again. Like, should take her for a ride, see how she does. Because all of them knew how much I wanted to be in the Volvo, and they kind of turned into my older brothers and crazy uncles.
Well, they do that, but they don't do that for people they don't have respect for. So you must have done a good job of earning that respect while you were at the Cup, and you must have really impressed people.
I definitely worked my ass off, to be honest. I did any job I was given. I spent a lot of time sweeping floors and washing the boat. And I just tried to take everything I could from them and learn as much as I could, whether it was from washing the boat down to being in the design office. I just ended up getting on really well with all the guys because the atmosphere there was, doesn't matter who you are, you put in everything you can to win the cup. Mm-hmm. And I think that's what Simeon saw in the end, was that I could take all of the banter from the guys and put up with working with 50 guys and being one of the only girls there. But still work.
Tell me about that, because the Volvo have made this big play, and we'll come on to your experience now of moving into the Team Axona Bell team in a second, but Volvo have made this big play. They've positively discriminated, if you like, in favour of the teams taking women on board. What's your perception of it? I mean, obviously, it's a good thing for you, but in general, you think that's the way that it should go?
To be honest, when the rule was first introduced, I was actually a little hesitant, because I always wanted to do the Volvo, and I was always determined that I would get in. But in a way, I would have preferred it if I'd gone in without the rule being there, mm-hmm. by proving my worth and getting there. But having been here and seen it in action, I do think it is actually a pretty good rule to have, because it's given girls a chance to get in and get that experience. And just like the under 30 rule, it's encouraging more and more people to be able to get on the boats, because there's so many people out there that want to do the Volvo but can't break in because you don't know the right people, or you're not quite the right age. So I think this rule helps encourage, get those people in, give them the skills that they need, that hopefully in 10 years' time, you don't need either of those rules, because there are enough women around that have the experience to teach more. Yeah. Because the problem at the moment is there just aren't enough women with offshore experience to be able to go around the whole world. Mm-hmm. I mean, you do have Dee and Liz and a lot of the SEA girls from last time, but there's still not quite enough to be able to make a really strong female team. well, 10 years' time, if you keep if in every team there are two girls, all of those girls are then going to have the experience. They're going to be able to teach others and really build up on it. Yeah. So.
And I think you'll create a whole bunch of really spectacular role models for girls to be, you know, to inspire, like you were inspired by just the concept of the race, but with people like yourself and other girls in the race, I think it's going to create fantastic role models, which will increase the snowball and make the whole thing happen faster. So let me take you back just a little bit to your first sailing experience, because I'm interested to know, you said you started at the age of 10, so where was it, what were you sailing, and who were you with?
Okay, so I was in Bermuda. My family used to own a little motorboat, and we went out one day to this little island called Mangrove Bay, and we met some family friends there, a guy called Adam Barbosa, who's quite a well-known Bermudian sailor, and he had a little opti, a little wooden one, that he'd got for his daughter, who was just a little bit younger than me, and she wasn't interested. And he'd brought it all the way out there, and so his daughter and my sister were off playing, and I was kind of the oldest and just didn't really have anything to do. Do you want to have a go? And I was like, sure, why not? Like, I'd never had any interest in sailing before, and I didn't have any family that did it or any friends that did it, so it never really crossed my path. So I just got in, and I instantly loved it. I begged my parents to sign me up for lessons, and that was it.
You were hooked.
I was in.
Bitten by the bug.
I continued opties for a couple of years, and then moved out when I was about 13. Just kind of grew too big, and did a little bit of lasers, and then moved to boarding school in the UK. And my school happened to have a really good sailing program, so I did RS Beavers as like British national squad and things like that, doing like the Worlds and Europeans, and slowly just getting more and more hooked. Team racing and then match racing, and university sailing pretty much took over most of my life.
Yeah, so you were team racing, you were part of that whole Boozer British University Sailing Association?
Yep, so I did team racing at university for 2-3 years. I was Boozer ladies captain for 2 years, and led the Boozer tour to the USA in 2014, 2015. I was the only girl in a tour of 10, which was entertaining. I was captain, so kind of had to organize everything. But I loved all of it, from the team racing to the match racing, the fleet racing. Just I tried to sail as much as I possibly could. And it's funny how small you find the sailing world then. I was match racing with another girl from my university called Annabelle Vos, she has kind of done all the same stuff that I have now. She did ship science and then did the Youth America's Cup and is now trialing with Brunel. Mm-hmm. So it's funny how you end up seeing the same people everywhere and you kind of push each other to get better and better and better.
And it seems like you've existed in this man's world, you know, the match racing, the team racing, you were the only girl, you were the captain and the only girl, the America's Cup, Youth America's Cup, you were, you know, you said there'd never been a girl in it before this cycle, but you were one of the first ones in. Yeah, one of three. And then with SoftBank Team Japan, one of the few girls in the whole thing.
Yep.
So I guess when you arrived here, and we all know that the Volvo is a male-dominated affair, and it's trying to change that, but there's no getting away from it. Is it still daunting? I mean, it looks like you're pretty good at dealing with it, but it can be pretty daunting for guys walking into one of these teams.
I'd definitely say it's daunting, but just not the male and female thing. But then that's me. I'm kind of used to it all. If anything, there's more girls than I'm used to. The ratio is actually better.
Right.
But I'd say it's daunting because there's so many guys that they've been my role models. They've done, and there's guys on this team who, this is their seventh Volvo. That is incredible to me. So being around this level of experience is such an exciting opportunity, and I was pretty terrified when I first came. I mean, I was sending messages to all the guys I know that had done the Volvo, because there's quite a few involved in the cup. Tell me everything you know about the 65. I was terrified of messing up on my trial, and I think the most nerve-wracking moment was when I got here, and Stephen was like, yeah, I was kind of looking for someone in the mid-bow area. I was like, great, I've never gone on the pointy end. I'm normally back of the bus. So that was a, right, I need to learn quickly.
Yeah.
I was quite lucky. The guys have all been incredible at getting me up to speed. There is no time to not learn quickly. If you don't learn quickly, dangerous things happen. So I've been pretty lucky with them teaching me and getting to grips with it fairly easily. Been quite a cool experience.
Tell me about the trial itself. Are you on trial, or do you feel like you're just going sailing with a crew and you're waiting to hear whether you're going to be picked? Do you feel like people are watching you particularly?
I wouldn't say I feel like I've been watched particularly, more that I feel I'm more aware of all the mistakes I made. Any mistake could be enough to ruin my chance. Mm-hmm. So I think I'm very over-aware of what's going on, but I think most of the guys didn't even realize I was still on trial. It's been 2 months. I remember at the beginning of Leg Zero, we were going around the island, and I was just chatting to Chuni, and I mentioned the fact I was on trial, and he was like, what?
Still?
Really? So I think most of them forgot about that, but I was very aware.
Leg Zero has been pretty interesting, or the time you spent here has been interesting, because you that included Leg Zero, as well as all the training you did separately with the team. And Leg Zero included the Fastnet, so I'm guessing that was your first Fastnet.
It was.
So tell me about that experience a bit.
Oh, it was awesome. I'd always wanted to do the Fastnet, but my summers have always been spent doing internships or working. So doing things like the Round the Island and the Fastnet, I've always had to be like, yeah, no, can't really do that. So actually getting to do the Fastnet was so exciting. And just going down the channel and rounding Land's End, it was pretty cool. And
yeah.
Having the perfect weather rounding the Fastnet rock was so lucky. I've got friends who have done the Fastnet and never seen the rock because the weather's been so bad. So I think we were pretty lucky. It was really cool how close all of the boats were. I mean, I've followed the Volvo and I saw how close they were last time, but you don't really realize until you're actually there. And you've been racing for 3 days and you're minutes apart. It's incredibly close racing and makes it very competitive, which I really enjoyed.
So I saw you when you came in from one of the offshore legs, and I said, you're always smiling, Emily. And you said to me, well, it's hard not to smile when you're on these boats. So you really love sailing these boats, don't you?
I could be sailing anything and I'd be pretty happy, but these boats are incredible. I remember when the boats were here for the last race, I was actually came to Lisbon on holiday at the same time as the stopover.
Just accidentally,
you know how those things happen. Exams finish and oh look, the Volvo's in Lisbon. And one of my friends was actually working as shore team for one of the teams and managed to give me a tour of Dongfeng. I just walked around, took pictures of everything. I was so excited, and I knew back then I really wanted to do it. So my first day on the 65, I was just there, kind of bouncing a little bit, so excited. And it hasn't quite worn off yet.
Can you explain it for people who haven't sailed one of these boats? Because they are, you know, they're canting keel. They're one of the most powerful sailboats in the world. And when you're racing them, you've got the other crews breathing down your neck or just in front of you. Can you explain a little bit maybe what it was like going out of the Solent on that very windy start for the Fastnet race?
In one word, wet. These boats are definitely one of the wettest boats I've sailed, and that's because they are so fast and powerful. And you're pretty much permanently sideways. The boats sail along at about 20 degrees of heel. So you learn to kind of walk at an angle while having to put in an extremely high amount of energy for grinding, lifting sails around. You basically spend your day moving your arms in circles and deadlifting, which does take quite a lot from you. And all this time you're getting battered by waves, especially if you go up on the front. And then you get to a point where the wind gets a bit shifty, you're changing angles a lot, and you've got boats all around you, and you're trying to get every knot of speed you can. So that means sail changes, and a lot of them. So.
Yeah, people sometimes think it must get easier when it gets lighter, but it often gets harder.
Yeah, it turns into sails up, sails down, this sail, that sail. And the hardest is probably around, I think we had about 10 to 15 rounding Land's End coming back in towards the finish during the Fastnet. And that was just in probably 40 minutes, I think we had almost every single sail up. It was literally hoist one, sail with it for a couple minutes, conditions changed it again. I mean, we were shattered up on the bow, just so tired, just wanted to get to the finish, and ended up getting in at whatever o'clock in the morning. I can't even remember.
4 o'clock. I was there. Yeah, it was 4 o'clock. Yeah.
4 a.m. Yeah, we definitely didn't sleep in those final few hours, so we were pretty shattered, but ecstatic at the same time because there's so much adrenaline. It's what you're doing is so cool.
That's a good description. What have you learnt from sailing with these professional sailors now for 2 months? I mean, that in itself is an amazing experience, I think.
Just learning about like all the techniques for sailing offshore, the techniques for sailing this boat, the sail trim, setting up things like outriggers and how to finely tune them. I mean, Chuni is an expert at trimming, and there's so many really good helms on the boat. I've had a couple of opportunities to helm. Never in like a race or anything, but it's just an incredible boat to steer, and like the guys will take time to kind of explain things and make sure you've got it, and then if you don't do it right after that, then it's come on, what are you doing? So it's been pretty cool, and learning how everything works on the bow, how just things like making sure you're clipping it on the right way for a hoist and making sure you know which buttons are which. It's all stuff that you have to memorize and just be able to do in your sleep, because a lot of the time you are sleepwalking when you do it. Mm-hmm. If you're off watch and going for a jibe at 2 a.m., you need to be up there in seconds and grinding.
And I think the other thing is with these bigger crews on offshore boats is the idea of teamwork. And people talk a lot about teamwork and how important it is and everything, but things just don't happen on these boats unless you're working as a team. Is that what you've experienced?
Yeah, so on these boats, they are so big and they're not set up to sail single-handed or double-handed. You need, I'd say, at least 4 people at a time to do any maneuver. So you've got to work as a team or you're going to suffer. You can do some things by yourself, but having another person there makes life infinitely easier. I mean, you look at the size of the sails. I can move the J3 by myself. That's it.
The smallest of the sails.
Exactly.
I'm impressed with that, to be honest with you. I'm not sure I could.
It's all right. It's about my weight. It's not too big. But if you're trying to move the masthead zero, I can be there tugging at the end of it. And I'll get it down slowly. But it's not easy. Well, at least if you have 4 or 5 people, pick it up, drop it, done. So teamwork makes a huge difference.
What are you most looking forward to from this race now? Because now you know you're part of the team. You're going to be taking part in the race. Now you can sit back and look ahead. You probably weren't letting yourself do that before too much in case you got disappointed. Now you can look ahead. What are you looking forward to?
Oh, just everything. But I think going to the Southern Ocean and getting to do the extreme stuff, I mean, everyone tells me I'm going to hate life when I'm down there. Like, they all say how hard it is, how wet it is, how you're going to be wet for 20 days and you're going to be cold. You're going to be the coldest you've ever been in your life. But I'm still at the point where I'm just like, okay.
You don't really mind. Yeah.
And like, I'm sure I will have my moments when I'm dark, but I'm just so excited to see what it's like and Cape Horn and just all of it.
So when in your crew questionnaire you were asked a question, what can't you live without? And you said your mum. And you said, just tell me what you talked about in terms of if you got into trouble in the Southern Ocean, what would happen?
Well, my mum is, she's pretty amazing. Everyone's going to say that. And she's very protective and has not a lot of understanding about sailing, which in this race is a good thing. Because if she knew how dangerous it was, there's no way I'd actually be doing it. I mean, she's pretty nervous already as it is. But she's also one of those people who can just make things happen. If you need something, she can organize it. Doesn't matter where you are, what it is. If something needs to be done, she will get it done. So always joke that, you know, if I'm stuck in the Southern Ocean or something happens, she will be out there with a helicopter or a Russian icebreaker before anybody else can even get there. She'd find a way to do it.
There's a phrase, the acorn doesn't fall far from the tree, and it sounds, the way you're describing your mum explains a lot about why you've achieved so much in your life. Talk about getting things done. I've got a couple of other questions about some of your answers on the crew questionnaire that you filled in. Your mantra in life, tell us what that is.
Just keep swimming.
So what's that all about?
That's from Finding Nemo. To be honest, I really like Disney movies. Yeah. So that's where that comes from. But I've always been one of those people that just doesn't like giving up on stuff. Much to my parents' annoyance, I always tell the story of the one time I've ever been grounded. I was a bit of a goody two-shoes at school and all of that. The one time I've ever been grounded was I gave up in a sailing race, just a Sunday racing, because it was too windy. I got scared and I gave up and I got grounded because my parents were like, you don't give up.
Wow.
You can capsize, you can do whatever, you can come dead last. Don't care. Just don't give up. And from there, I say, okay, I just don't give up. And I've kind of stuck by that. With my degree, when things got rough, it was like, no, just keep going, you will get there eventually. And I've done that with sailing. I've had my, opties. I was not good. Let's be honest, I was not good in opties. But I stuck with it, and I enjoyed sailing. And then it paid off over time. I got better and found the boats that I liked, and I found what I was good at and what I wasn't so good at, and I've just kind of stuck by that, whatever I've had to do. I mean, working at SoftBank, I did 6 months working for free, doing the crazy hours that you work as a cup team, and it paid off. I got offered a job, and I got there, and with this, it was the same again.
Just keep swimming.
Keep working and just keep swimming, and
I like it. I think it served you pretty well. A couple of last questions. What do you think you bring to this team?
I'd say I bring a bit of a new perspective on everything. Definitely showing that you don't necessarily have to come from that sailing background. I'd like to think kind of different energy and a different sailing background always helps when approached with a problem. And I tend to take things quite seriously, but I tend to have a sense of optimism as well, which I think every team needs. And I think when you've got a lot of characters, sometimes you do need that optimism to boost the team a bit.
But I like it. I think that's great. I think that's good attributes to bring to the team. So let's tick them off. America's Cup, Volvo Ocean Race. What's next after this? What does the future hold, the longer-term future for you? Do you see yourself skippering a Volvo Ocean Race team at some point?
I'd definitely love to at some point. I think, I haven't finished the race yet, so maybe ask me in a year's time, but I've definitely gotten hooked to not being in an office. So I'd definitely like to keep sailing professionally, and I'd definitely love to see what this race could have for me in the future. At the same time, definitely not done with the America's Cup yet. Haven't won the cup, and so that's definitely one day I'd like to get back out there. If things change, maybe as a sailor, that would be the dream. Win the America's Cup and winning the Volvo, the dreams, so try and see where that can take me.
Well, I for one wouldn't bet against you, Emily Nagel. Congratulations again at joining the team, and the very best of luck, and thanks for talking to me today.
Thank you.